This is Audible.
The Nantucket Inn by Pamela M. Kelly. Read for you by Carissa Vacker. Chapter 1. The money was running out. Lisa Hodges sighed as she sat at her kitchen island and looked over the month-to-date transactions in her checking account. How did it disappear so quickly? She couldn't remember the last time she'd bought herself new clothes, and she'd cut way back on going out to dinner with friends. But living on Nantucket was expensive, especially now that her husband Brian was gone. Food, cable, insurance, it all added up too fast. They'd been married for just over 33 years when Brian learned he had stage 4 colon cancer. 6 months later, he was gone. That was almost a year and a half ago, and when she'd finally been able to push aside her grief long enough to look at the bills, she'd been shocked at the state of their bank account. Brian had always handled all the financial matters in their relationship. He earned the money, managed the banking accounts, and paid the bills. She had access to their main checking account, of course, and knew there was always plenty of money in it for their day-to-day expenses. She also knew they had a healthy savings account that Brian regularly contributed to. They'd always lived a comfortable lifestyle. Not extravagant, but there was always money for one or two vacations a year, college for the kids, and dinners out a few times a month. And she'd assumed there was still a life insurance policy. She knew that at one time there were million-dollar policies on both of them. Brian earned his living as a financial planner, and she'd always deferred to whatever he suggested, as she'd never been good with numbers. Lisa had been an English major in college and an elementary school teacher until she had the twins, and then Brian pointed out that the math didn't add up for her to go back to work. They would pay as much in daycare for Kate and Kristen as she'd earned teaching. So the decision was made for her to stay home with their children. And she'd loved doing it. In the next few years, they had two more children, Abby and Chase. Brian's only vice was that he was a bit of a gambler. He'd loved to go off island with his buddies to visit the Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun casinos. And he and his friends always had poker nights the first Saturday of every month. She'd always assumed they played for small amounts and that it was all in good fun. It wasn't until Brian was gone and she dug more deeply into their finances that she discovered he actually had a serious gambling addiction. Brian had stopped paying the premiums on their life insurance policies several years ago, and the balance in their savings and retirement account was shockingly low. The retirement account was gone. There was nothing there at all. He'd withdrawn everything that was in their 401k, paid the penalties, and used the money to settle debts that she'd never even known about. There was money in their savings account still, but Lisa knew she'd have to cut way back on her normal spending habits to make the money stretch. By her calculations, if she did that, she might be able to make it stretch for almost 2 years, if she was lucky. She wasn't too worried at the time, though, as she figured she'd be able to get a job and the savings could be her safety cushion. But she quickly found out that the market for 50-something women with no recent work experience was non-existent. And Nantucket was a small town with limited opportunities. She could possibly get a job as a cashier in one of the shops, but those paid minimum wage, which wouldn't go far. Restaurant work paid better. She knew that servers could do very well on tips, but she'd never worked in a restaurant and everyone wanted experience. It was almost time for her to make a big decision, one that she'd been putting off for as long as possible. She sighed as she closed her laptop, stood up, and peeked in the oven. The artichoke and spinach casserole was just beginning to bubble. In a few more minutes, the cheese topping would be golden brown and it would be done. Her two best friends, Paige and Susan, should be along any minute. They'd suggested going out to dinner, but she'd talked them into having appetizers at her house instead before they went downtown for the festive Nantucket Christmas stroll. It was always held the first weekend in December, and they looked forward to it every year. She'd been living on the island for over 30 years now, and the stroll had been around even longer than that. It had started as a way for local shops to drum up a bit of business in the off-season and to prevent the locals from doing all their shopping off-island. It always felt like the official kickoff to the Christmas season. Lisa stepped outside to check her Christmas decorations before her friends arrived. She'd just decorated the house earlier that day. She took a deep breath as she surveyed the house. Nantucket Sound was just a few hundred yards away, and she could hear the waves as they crashed on the beach, a sound that she always found soothing. The air was cool and crisp, and she could smell a whiff of smoke coming from the fireplace of the house next door. She breathed in deeply as a gust of salty air blew her shoulder-length hair back. She heard footsteps behind her and turned to see Paige and Sue coming down the walk.
The house looks gorgeous! Where did you find that blue wreath? I love it! Paige exclaimed. Do you really like it? I made it this morning.
She'd walked along the beach and collected scallop shells and sea glass and used fine wire to wrap it around several pieces of driftwood that she'd glued into a circle and spray-painted a pale blue. A snowy white bow at the top was the final touch. It had been a fun project, and she'd been pleased by how well it had turned out.
It looks like you bought it at a fancy boutique, Sue said. I brought my baked scallops, she added as Lisa opened the front door and they followed her inside.
Paige was holding a platter and set it on the kitchen island and removed the tinfoil cover. A selection of cheeses and sliced salami surrounded a small bowl of spiced nuts. She reached into her tote bag and pulled out a bottle of red wine.
Peter said this one is supposed to be good. I haven't tried it yet.
Peter Bradford was about their age and owned Bradford's Liquors, which was the only place to buy alcohol in Beach Plum Cove, the area of Nantucket where they all lived. Lisa found a wine opener and poured them each a glass. She set the bubbling spinach and artichoke dip in the middle of the island and opened a box of crackers to serve with it. They sat around the island, nibbling on everything as they sipped their wine. Sue's baked scallops were buttery, fresh, and sweet, and Lisa was glad to see that her dip was a hit. When they were just about done, she brought up the subject that she'd been putting off as long as she could.
If you were to use a realtor, who would you go with? Missy Cunningham or Trevor Eldridge?
Paige raised her eyebrows.
Who needs a realtor?
I might, Lisa said. I thought you said you'd never sell.
Sue looked confused.
You're not thinking of moving off-island.
I don't want to sell, but I may not have a choice. My money is running out, and even though the taxes on Nantucket are low, the real estate prices are high.
But Brian was a financial planner. I thought you were all set for retirement.
Paige looked both furious and worried at the same time. Lisa sighed and then told them about the gambling debts and the retirement account and the savings that had been drained.
You didn't know about any of it? Sue asked.
I had no idea. Brian always handled that, and since it was what he did for work, I never thought to question him. I thought I would have been able to find a job by now. I really hate the idea of moving.
Even if you sell, everything else on the island is expensive. You might have savings for a while, but you'll still need money to live,
Sue said. I know. I've been trying to figure out a way to stay, but I am at the point now where I just don't think it's possible. At least there's no mortgage, so once I sell, I'll have a little time to decide what to do next. I could always rent for a while, maybe.
Nantucket rentals are ridiculously expensive.
Paige looked thoughtful as she added more wine to their glasses.
Your house is awfully big for one person. How many bedrooms do you have?
6 total, 5 upstairs and the master on the first floor.
Have you ever heard of Airbnb? You could make some money renting out the rooms.
To strangers? Sue sounded appalled at the idea of it. That doesn't sound very safe.
People do it all the time. It's the newest way to travel.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, Lisa said.
You're a great cook and you love to entertain and to decorate. You could turn the house into a bed and breakfast and still have plenty of room for yourself.
A bed and breakfast? That is an interesting idea. Over the years, Lisa had thought more than once that it might be fun to own a bed and breakfast someday, to serve some of her homemade favorites to guests. But dreaming about it was one thing, actually doing it was another.
Would you actually consider it?
Sue sounded surprised. I don't think so. I love the idea, but I would imagine it would take a lot of money to get it up and running.
I don't think it would. Your son is a builder. He could probably help you out. All you'd really need to do is close off most of the bottom floor so guests could only access the dining room and stairs to the second floor. And you'd still have your privacy.
Paige made it sound so simple. Lisa didn't think that it would be, but she supposed it wouldn't hurt to at least act like she was considering the idea. I'll ask Chase to stop by one day this week and see what he thinks. She was pretty sure that he'd think they were all crazy.
Have him over for dinner and make him something delicious.
Can't hurt, Paige laughed. I'll do that. So, are you ladies ready to go strolling? I need to walk off this dip. Kate Hodges rushed back into her bedroom and looked around until she saw the shoes she was looking for under Dylan's jeans. He'd left them in a crumpled heap on the floor, as usual. She slid her feet into them and glanced at the bed where her fiancé lay sleeping. His dark hair fell over his forehead, and he looked so sweet and peaceful, and so handsome that he took her breath away. He yawned just as she turned to go, and his sleepy voice stopped her.
Is it that time already?
I'm going in early. It's not even 8 yet.
Dylan stretched and grinned.
Kiss before you go?
I really have to run,
Kate said as she walked over and kissed him lightly on the lips.
My last shoot should end by 6. Want to meet me for dinner in the North End?
Dylan was a photographer and often did work for the magazine Kate worked for. That was how they'd met almost 2 years ago. He'd swept her off her feet and she'd resisted as long as she could. Dylan was so charming and so good-looking that it made her nervous. He was a flirt and girls were drawn to him. Kate didn't trust that his interest in her was real at first, but he won her over and 6 months later he'd proposed and she'd moved in with him. They hadn't set a date yet, as they were both very busy, and for now it suited them to just live together. If Kate was being honest, she'd admit that she wasn't totally sure that what they had was a forever kind of love. Dylan was still a big flirt, and sometimes it bothered her. He always laughed it off and told her she was being silly, and he was moody and distant at times. But whenever she'd question him about it, he said it was just part of his creative process, and then he'd focus his attention on her fully and she'd feel foolish for doubting him.
North End sounds great. I'll meet you at Al Dente at 6.
They almost always went to the same restaurant in Boston's Italian neighborhood. They'd had their first date there, and it was always so good. And then they'd stroll down Hanover Street and share a cannoli at Modern Pastry. Kate's office near South Station was an easy walk there after work. Their condo in the Charlestown Navy Yard was just a 15-minute ferry ride across the harbor to the aquarium near South Station. Kate loved living in Charlestown and looking across the water at the Boston skyline, although she still got homesick at times for Nantucket. As much as she would have loved to stay on the island with the rest of her family, Boston was where she needed to be for her career. The office was quiet when she arrived. The only person there was Amanda, which was no surprise. Amanda was Boston Style's founder, and she was always in the office.
She was an older woman, in her early 60s, divorced and very stylish. She lived and breathed Boston style. The magazine was a regional one with a focus on local fashion, food, and politics. It was well-respected, and Kate had felt very lucky to land a position there right out of college. She'd started as an assistant, doing the things no one else wanted to do. But she'd done it all with a smile and an eagerness that had been rewarded. Her dream was always to write, anything from articles to columns and maybe someday, a book. She often did big investigative journals in which she'd won several awards for, and her mother bragged about them to all her friends. Kate settled at her desk and quickly got lost in the project that had to be done by the end of the day. She finished a little before 3, and after emailing her feature to Amanda, she decided to reward herself with a vanilla chai latte. She was stiff from sitting, and the walk would do her good. 15 minutes later, she returned and was sipping her foamy drink as she came through the revolving front doors and almost walked into 2 laughing girls, Tasha, their art director, and Ellie, a drop-dead gorgeous blonde model they'd recently used for a fashion feature. Dylan had photographed her and had raved about her, saying that the light loved her. But Ellie stopped smiling when she saw Kate. A cold look came over her face, and Kate took a step back in surprise. But Tasha didn't seem to notice.
"Hey, Kate, tell Dylan when you see him that he really outdid himself. The last batch of photos he sent were amazing."
Ellie's expression changed again as she smiled and teasingly said,
"Of course they were. I'm in them."
They both laughed, and Kate smiled too. She must have imagined the frosty glare, or maybe Ellie had meant it for someone else as she was all smiles as the two of them walked off. Dylan was waiting for her at the restaurant when she arrived a few minutes after 6. Al Dente was just around the corner from Hanover Street, where most of the restaurants and shops were. Kate always felt like she'd stepped into Italy whenever she went there. The food was always good, and the servers recognized them as regulars and always made them feel welcome. They had a delicious dinner, as usual, and were finishing the last of the bottle of Chianti they'd ordered when Kate brought up going to Nantucket for Christmas. "I talked to my mother earlier, and everyone is coming over Friday for Christmas Eve. I thought we could stay until Monday and make a long weekend of it." Dylan had only met her mother once, when she'd come to Boston, and he'd never met any of her siblings, which they liked to tease her about. She understood somewhat, though. It was a bit of a project getting to Nantucket. It wasn't like they could just drive over for dinner. It took some planning, and Dylan traveled quite a bit for his work, and so far, their schedules just hadn't worked to make it happen. Dylan lifted his glass and swirled the wine around before taking a sip. He looked deep in thought, and Kate started to feel her stomach tighten. She was counting on him to go to Nantucket for Christmas. He took a long sip before saying,
"I don't know if I can make that work, Kate. I have a shoot in California a few days before. I might need to stay longer. Plus, my mother is in LA. I can't go there without visiting her. You know how it is."
She sighed. "I do. I just want you to meet the rest of my family. They tease me now that you don't exist." He flashed her the smile that used to make her melt.
"Why don't we go after the new year? It won't be as busy, and we'll be able to see your family then."
"We'll see. Maybe you'll finish up early and can visit your mom and still make it to Nantucket." Kate knew, though, as she said it, that it wasn't going to happen.
"I'll try. No promises, though."
After paying the bill, Dylan smiled.
"Did you save room for dessert? We could go to Modern."
Kate wasn't the least bit hungry, but needed something to put her in a better mood.
"Sure, let's get a cannoli."
The light that had been so glorious all day was beginning to fade, and Kristen was too. She stood and stretched to relieve the muscles that had grown stiff from sitting in the same position all afternoon, as the sunlight had poured in through the floor-to-ceiling windows. Her studio was a colorful mess, as always. Sketch pads were strewn about the room, canvases in varying stages of completion leaned against the walls, and magazines and books threatened to topple off her coffee table. But she knew where everything was, and it worked for her. It was her happy place, and she was feeling good about her latest project. She was using a photograph she'd taken as inspiration for a watercolor, and it was almost done. When it was finished, she'd add it to the collection she was building for her next art show. She glanced at the clock on the wall and began to feel stressed. Sean, her on-again boyfriend of sorts, was coming for dinner, and she still needed to shower and figure out what she was going to cook for him. When she'd invited him a few days ago, it had seemed like a good idea, but all she felt like doing now was taking a long, hot bath and maybe pouring herself a glass of wine. But she needed to get moving. When she reached the kitchen, her phone rang, and the caller ID showed that it was Sean. He was probably running late, as usual. Ordinarily, she'd be annoyed, but today she welcomed the extra time.
Hi, Sean. What's up?
It's about tonight,
he began. Are you running late? If so, no worries.
No, it's not about that. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to reschedule. Andrea called to remind me that Julian has a big game tonight. If they win, they make the playoffs. I should be there.
Oh, of course you should. We'll do it another time. Tell Julian I said good luck.
I'll do that. Thanks for understanding. I'll call you tomorrow.
Kristen hung up the phone, feeling both relieved and irritated at the same time. She was happy to have the night to herself, but hated picturing Sean sitting with his wife as they watched their son play basketball. It also annoyed her that they were still separated for over 4 years now, and neither had filed for divorce yet. The few times she'd brought it up, Sean had just said that it was complicated and changed the subject. Sean owned one of the most successful real estate offices on the island, and Kristen suspected that he wasn't ready to give up half of his financial holdings, and Andrea wasn't ready to give up everything that went with being Mrs. Sean Prescott. Sean was well-connected in town and had a membership at the most exclusive country club, and their waterfront estate was massive. Andrea was still living there with Julian, while Sean had moved into a smaller place, a condo on the pier, across from where the ferries docked. Kristen was about to pour herself a glass of Chardonnay and go sink into a hot bath when her cell phone rang again. This time, it was Abby, her younger sister. Abby rarely called just to chat.
Hey, Abby. Are you busy? I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
She sounded agitated.
Of course not. I'm done for the day. Is everything okay?
There was a long moment of silence before Abby spoke.
Yeah, it's just been a long day, and I'd love to meet for a drink and catch up, unless you have other plans. My plans just got canceled, actually, so I'm all yours. Do you want to go out or come here? I have a bottle of wine I was about to open, and I could make us some pasta or something. How about I bring our favorite pizza? I could pick it up and be over in about half an hour or so.
Perfect. Kristen took a quick shower and relaxed as the hot water soothed her tired muscles. She changed into her favorite yoga pants and a soft, long-sleeved t-shirt and had just finished blow-drying her shoulder-length, stick-straight brown hair when she heard footsteps outside. Abby had arrived. She could smell the pizza as she reached the front door and opened it. Abby stepped in and handed her the box.
Spinach, artichoke, and feta?
Kristen asked. It smells amazing. Abby grinned.
Of course. Great, I'll pour us some wine if you want to get the paper plates out of the cabinet.
She poured them two generous glasses of Chardonnay, and they each loaded two slices of pizza on their plates and went into the sunroom. Kristen's cottage was small but cozy, and when she wasn't in her studio, she loved spending time in the sunroom. In the summer months, she kept the windows wide open to let the fresh air in. She wasn't on the water, but even the most inland house on Nantucket still had crisp ocean breezes. In the cooler months, the room stayed warm because it faced the sun, and she loved to curl up on the soft white sofa at the end of the day and read or watch a little TV. They settled on the sofa and put their wine and plates on the coffee table. The conversation was light and easy as they ate and sipped their wine. Abby hadn't mentioned anything out of the ordinary, but Kristen knew something was bothering her. After they finished eating, Kristen topped off her glass with a splash more wine and noticed that Abby had barely touched hers, which was unusual.
So why was today such a long day?
Abby sighed.
I'm probably making too much of it. Jeff's really a great guy. I know that.
Abby had married her high school sweetheart. She and Jeff had been dating since their sophomore year and got married a year after they both graduated from college. They were almost 30 now, and as far as Kristen knew, they were happily married. Their only frustration was that they hadn't been able to get pregnant, even after several attempts with IVF. And the process was much more difficult, both physically and emotionally, than Abby had expected. They'd all been surprised by that.
What is it?
Well, it's just that he's never home. He works so much, more than ever before. He says it's because he needs to put in the time to grow the business, but it's almost like an addiction with him. He thinks about work morning, noon, and night, and weekends too. I don't remember the last time we went away or even just went out to dinner. By the time Jeff gets home at night, he's so tired that he falls asleep on the sofa around 7.
Have you talked to him about it? Asked him to cut back on his hours?
Abby nodded. Dozens of times. He always apologizes, cuts back for a week or two, then slips back into his usual habits. I've had it. And it's been a long time coming, but I finally decided that I can't live this way. Kristen was shocked, as Abby and Jeff had always seemed like the most rock solid of couples. But she also understood. If Abby wasn't happy, she should do something about it.
Are you considering divorce?
Yes. I have been thinking a lot about it recently. It's hard, but I finally made the decision to do it. She looked so devastated, though, that Kristen wrapped her younger sister in a hug and squeezed her tight for a moment.
I'm so sorry, honey.
She tried to think of something positive that didn't sound like a cliche, but the best she could come up with was,
well, maybe it's a blessing in a way that you had a hard time getting pregnant.
Abby looked as though she was on the verge of tears, but laughed a little instead before saying,
well, that's part of the reason why I wanted to come over here.
I'd just made this decision, this big decision, and then promptly threw up. At first, I thought it was nerves or something I'd eaten, but then the thought occurred to me that it might be something else.
You think you might be pregnant? But I thought the last round of IVF didn't work.
It didn't. And since we did 2 rounds back to back that failed, we were going to take the holidays off before trying again. I've been so stressed and didn't think it was even a possibility without help, so I didn't realize that I was late.
So you are pregnant?
I don't know. I haven't checked it. I brought a pregnancy test with me. It's just so huge if I am. Normally, I'd check it with Jeff, but given what I've been considering...
Of course. I'm glad you waited to do it here. I'll support you no matter what it says.
Thank you. She took a deep breath. I'm going to go check now. Abby grabbed her purse and went off to the bathroom while Kristen cleared their paper plates and put the leftover pizza in the refrigerator. When she was done, she went back to her sofa, took a sip of her wine, and waited. Finally, she heard the bathroom door open and Abby walked toward her, holding the pregnancy stick. Tears were streaming down her face and her eyes were red. She'd clearly spent several minutes crying after she read the results. Kristen got up and pulled her sister into a hug.
I'm so sorry. It will happen for you eventually. I know it will.
Abby hiccuped and sort of laughed a little as they sat back down on the sofa. She handed Kristen the pregnancy stick. It had two clear lines on it. She looked at her sister in confusion.
You're pregnant?
Abby smiled.
I am. But that's great news. Jeff will be so excited. Maybe this is just what the two of you need.
But Abby shook her head sadly.
My baby doesn't need a father who is never there. I still want a divorce.
Her voice broke a bit as she added,
or at least a separation.
Chapter 2. Abby left her sister's house and drove home, her emotions churning. She was excited to be pregnant, finally. It was just ironic that when they'd been trying so hard to make it happen, including with IVF and that didn't work, suddenly finding herself pregnant was a shock. She'd Googled it, though, and learned that it wasn't all that unusual. Many couples failed to get pregnant and turned to adoption only to welcome a surprise baby of their own at some point. Doctors said it was because they were more relaxed and not anxiously trying so hard. As excited as she was, Abby was still dreading the conversation that she knew she needed to have with Jeff. She hoped that they could get past this and work it out, but they'd been down this road before several times. Each time, Jeff had promised to cut his hours back, and he had, but it never lasted for more than a week or two. And then he'd start going in earlier or staying later, and either way, he'd inhale dinner and then fall asleep on the sofa around 7. 7. She appreciated that he was a hard worker and knew that his family's business had more than doubled since he'd taken over. But at what cost? And she didn't want him to agree just because of the baby. She didn't trust that it would last if he did. She needed him to see that he was killing their relationship, even as his business thrived. He needed to find a way to delegate more and to get his life, their life, back. But she dreaded the conversation, and she knew she was feeling more emotional than usual because of the pregnancy hormones. She stopped at the market on the way home and picked up a chicken, carrots, and potatoes. She knew that Jeff would be sound asleep when she got home, but she figured it wouldn't hurt to make his favorite dinner tomorrow. So the next evening, when Jeff walked through the door at 6:45, the house smelled amazing from the chicken and vegetables that had been roasting in the oven. He stopped short and took a deep sniff.
That smells fantastic.
Abby smiled. The chickens looked good at the market. Everything's ready if you are.
Sure. You feel like a glass of wine. I'm pouring.
He got two glasses out of a cupboard before Abby could speak. I'm just going to have water. My stomach is a little off. She already had a full glass of water that she'd been sipping on.
Oh, okay.
He put one of the glasses back and poured himself some Merlot. Abby made plates for both of them, and they ate at the kitchen table. Jeff talked excitedly about a new client he'd landed. She watched him as he spoke. He was so animated and earnest. She'd always loved how passionate he was about his work before it took over everything. She loved how his eyes lit up as he spoke, and how small laugh lines danced around the edges of his mouth, how his sandy brown hair fell over his forehead. It was thick and a little too long. He needed a cut, but she'd always liked it this way, on the long side. She sighed. She loved him dearly, but she just couldn't live like this anymore. She knew she had a short window of time, maybe 30 minutes before she'd lose Jeff's attention, before his eyes would grow heavy and he'd start to snore softly as he lay on the living room sofa. After he had a second helping of chicken, she cleared their plates, and when he stood to go into the living room, she told him to sit back down. There's something I need to talk to you about. She knew that a certain tone had crept into her voice. It made him raise his eyebrows as he settled back into his seat.
Is something wrong?
He asked as he took his last sip of wine. She sat down too and folded her hands in front of her. We need to talk. We've had this conversation before, and I can't do this anymore.
What are you saying? Is it my hours? You want me to cut back again?
Abby sighed. Not again. Not temporarily. I need a permanent change, Jeff. You leave before 5 most mornings, get home after 6, and you're dead to the world by 7. It's not fun for me or fair. Jeff ran a hand through his hair and looked frustrated.
It won't be forever, but I need to be there.
Why? You've got the company running better than ever. What time does Jason come in? When does he leave? What about your father and your uncles? None of them are putting in the hours you are they? He was quiet for a moment and finally said,
Jason comes in when I do on most days.
He doesn't stay as late, though, does he? Abby knew that he didn't.
No, not usually.
You're the one that's in charge. You should be able to find a way to delegate more so that you don't have to spend as much time there.
I'll try. I'll see what I can do.
He sounded frustrated and defensive, and Abby knew nothing was going to change. Jeff, seriously, I'm done. Totally cooked. I can't go on like this. I think we need some time apart to see if you can find a way to work out a new schedule and stick to it. A week or two isn't what I have in mind. I need a permanent change, or we can just end this. Jeff's jaw dropped.
You're serious?
Yes. I can move out, or you can. Abby knew she could stay with Kristen if she needed to. Jeff was wide awake now and alternated between angry and panicked at what was happening.
You don't have to leave. We can work this out.
I really think one of us has to leave for a while. We need a break. I'm hoping it will be a temporary one. If you really change your schedule and keep to it for longer than a month, we can revisit moving back in. I can go to Kristen's if you want me to leave.
I can't believe you're doing this.
He stood and paced, and she could tell his mind was racing, processing what she'd said. He stopped finally. A decision reached.
I don't want you to leave. I'll go to Jason's.
His voice broke a little, and her heart did too when he asked,
Can I still see you?
Of course. She tried to smile. Maybe we'll go on a real date night. Jeff didn't look at all happy about the situation.
All right. I'll pack a bag and head to Jason's. I guess I'll call you in a day or two. So what's this mysterious project that you want my help with? Are you serious about making your walk-in closet bigger? You've been talking about doing that for years.
Chase teased Lisa as he leaned against the kitchen island. She'd invited him over for dinner and to ask his advice. She'd always thought of Chase as her golden child, her beautiful boy. His hair was the color of sunshine, and his eyes were a bright green with specks of gold. He was tall and lanky. He'd always been thin and able to eat everything without putting on weight. His eyes fell on the tray of stuffed shells that had just come out of the oven and were resting on a wire rack.
And you made my favorite meal. I haven't had the shells in ages.
Lisa smiled. I did. I like them too, and as you said, I haven't made them in a while. Let's sit down and eat, and I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. It's not a bigger closet. She set a bowl of salad in the middle of the kitchen table next to a loaf of crusty Italian bread, and then dished out plates of pasta for both of them. Beer for you, or wine? She asked.
I'll grab a beer, thanks.
Chase helped himself to one of the beers that Lisa kept in the fridge just for him or anyone else that came by that liked beer. She didn't drink it. She poured herself a small glass of Merlot and they sat down to eat. Over dinner, she told him about the idea the girls had that was growing more appealing as she thought about it. She was curious to see what Chase would think, both as a builder and as her son.
You want to turn this place into a bed and breakfast?
He was surprised at first, but But as they talked and she filled him in on everything, telling him for the first time about the true state of her financial situation, his eyes narrowed with concern and then lit up as he looked around the room, assessing the possibilities.
I'm sorry that Dad left you in this situation. I had no idea about the gambling.
Lisa sighed. None of us did. Chase took his last bite, then stood up and walked around the first floor, before returning to the kitchen table, where Lisa was still finishing her shells. She looked up and was happy to see that he was smiling.
You could totally do it. If it means that you get to stay here, I'm all for it.
Lisa stood too and felt a glimmer of excitement and a fluttering of nerves. She knew that Chase would be the easy one. Her other children might not take this news as well. And she still didn't know if she'd even be able to afford to make improvements. There was very little money left for anything. Will it be very expensive, do you think? She chewed her bottom lip and waited for bad news.
No, it won't be. All I need to do is add a few walls and doors to close off your living area so guests only have access to the second floor and dining room.
He gave her a figure that was shockingly low. I don't want you to lose money on this, honey. But Chase laughed.
I won't lose money. You'll only pay for the materials and we won't need much. I can't charge you for my time. I want to do this for you.
Lisa felt tears of gratitude well up and spill over as she pulled her son in for a hug. Thank you. I'm so glad you think this is a good idea. I thought it was crazy at first, but it's kind of growing on me.
I think it's a great idea. There's not a lot of jobs on Nantucket Island that would be good for you.
That's a nice way of putting it, Lisa laughed.
Seriously, though, you love to cook and you're good at it. And this is Nantucket. People will be happy to pay a lot of money to stay here, especially right on the water.
I hope so. Now I just have to break the news to the girls. Chase grinned.
Good luck with that.
They both knew that the girls might not be as initially excited about the idea.
It won't take me more than a weekend to do this. I can have it done before everyone comes for Christmas.
So soon? Lisa was nervous about Chase starting the work so quickly. It made everything real. But it also made the most sense. Okay, let's do it, she said.
Chapter 3. Change was in the air. Everyone could feel it. Amanda had been in closed-door early morning meetings almost every day for the past week, and there had been an unscheduled board meeting in the conference room the week before. All kinds of rumors were flying around, but the one that made the most sense was that Amanda might be selling Boston Style. And the question on everyone's mind was what that might mean for the magazine and their own jobs. Because everyone was worried, they were also bonding together. The Tuesday before Christmas weekend, Tasha, the art director, invited Kate to join her and a few others in the office for drinks after work. That had only happened once before that Kate could remember. She really didn't hang out with people in the office much since her friend, Ashley, another writer, left to move to New York. That was right around the time she met Dylan and started spending all her time with him. They went to the Black Rose, an Irish pub in Faneuil Hall, the historic brick buildings that were full of shops and restaurants. Tasha found them an empty table, and they ordered a round of drinks, Guinness beers for everyone except Kate, who went with a glass of Cabernet. When the drinks arrived, Tasha raised her glass. To hoping we all get to keep our jobs.
You don't think they'd actually lay off people right before Christmas?
Andy, a junior designer, looked horrified. They might. Lots of companies do. It helps them look more profitable before the new year starts or something like that, Tasha said.
I can't imagine that Amanda would do that, not before Christmas. Though I couldn't imagine she'd ever sell either, Kate said.
You'll probably be safe. You've been here forever and you're her top writer. Tasha said. Kate was thinking the same thing, but it seemed insensitive to say so.
I don't know about that. Hopefully, no one will be cut, and there's something else going on, and the magazine isn't being sold. Maybe she's looking to expand?
But Tasha laughed at the idea.
I don't think many magazines are expanding. Our numbers haven't grown in the past 5 years. We're holding our own, barely. Look at all the newspapers and other magazines that have downsized. Everything is moving to digital.
They were quiet for a moment. It was the truth. The internet had changed the media world considerably in the past 10 years. Kate felt a little guilty thinking about it because she was part of the problem. She never bought a print newspaper anymore. She read all her news online. Although she paid for subscriptions to the Boston Globe and New York Times, she knew that many people only read the free content, and revenues were continually decreasing with all media companies.
On a different note, what's everyone doing for Christmas? Kate, is Dylan going with you to Nantucket?
No, he has a shoot in California and will be spending time with his mother in LA.
I didn't realize he had family out there. That's too bad.
We're hoping to get to Nantucket, maybe for New Year's Eve.
Oh, that would be fun.
They had a second round of drinks, and it was a little before 7 by the time Kate arrived home. She was surprised to see that Dylan wasn't home yet either. They usually talked or texted at least once during the day. She checked her phone to see if she'd missed a call and saw that she had a text message from him.
Working late tonight. Don't wait for me for dinner. I'll see you later.
She tried to remember what he'd said he was working on that would keep him so late. But it wasn't unusual for Dylan to work long hours. He was a perfectionist with his work and would keep going until the light was just right and he got the perfect shot, the one that matched his vision. She wasn't starving and didn't feel like cooking much of anything, so she microwaved a potato, threw some butter and sriracha sauce on it, and called it dinner. She climbed into her pajamas after eating and curled up on the sofa to read for a while and watch a little HGTV. She was obsessed with the home renovation shows and how sometimes the simplest things, like a fresh coat of paint or a new floor, could make something look so much nicer. Kate watched the news for a while at 11 and finally gave up on waiting for Dylan to come home and went to bed. She was just drifting off to sleep when she heard the front door open. Dylan came into the room, saw that the lights were off and that she was in bed. He quietly undressed and joined her.
You're awfully late, she said softly.
Yeah, it was a long day. I thought you were sleeping.
He leaned over and gave her a quick kiss. She tasted alcohol on his breath. Whiskey.
I almost was asleep. Did you go out tonight?
Just for one. Tony was on tonight, and I stopped in for a quick drink to unwind. I figured you'd be asleep.
Kate wasn't sure whether to be annoyed or to appreciate his consideration not to disturb her.
What were you working on that made it such a long day?
A catalog shoot for Murray's on Newberry Street. It's a huge project.
Murray's was one of the most expensive boutiques on Newberry Street, Boston's equivalent of Rodeo Drive.
I was hoping to finish up today, but it looks like I need another day to do it right.
Kate yawned.
Okay, I have to be up early, so I'll see you in the morning.
Dylan was dead to the world when Kate left for work the next day. She told him she'd see him later that evening, and he just snored in reply. She figured he'd probably go in late and work late again. His schedule was more flexible than hers. The mood in the office was still tense, but Kate relaxed a bit when she got a phone call around 10 with incredibly good news. She'd been shortlisted for a major journalism award for an investigative feature she'd done earlier in the year. So when Amanda emailed her at 11 and asked her to come to her office, she assumed it was to congratulate her, as Amanda would have been notified as well. She smiled as she tapped on Amanda's door, which was ajar.
Come in and shut the door behind you.
Kate entered the room and shut the door, which was a somewhat unusual request. Amanda usually kept her door open. Have a seat, Kate. Amanda indicated the leather chair across from her massive dark wood desk. It was set in the corner of a large room and faced out over Boston Harbor. Kate sat and waited. Amanda smiled and tapped her hands nervously on her desk, finally steepling them and resting her chin on her hands as she looked at Amanda. Congratulations on being shortlisted. It's a well-deserved honor. Kate relaxed a bit and smiled at the compliment. Amanda didn't hand them out often. But it makes this even more difficult. Kate, you're one of my best employees and longest term. I don't have a single complaint about your work. But I've had to make some difficult decisions this week. You may have noticed we had a board meeting recently, and there have been a lot of people in suits in and out this past week. Kate nodded and felt her stomach tighten. I never planned to do this, but I'm selling Boston Style. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and well, I'm not getting any younger. I'll be staying on for a few years as publisher, but it won't be my company any longer. And the new owners are looking to cut costs. They are looking to cut most of the higher-paid salaried writers and move to using freelancers. I'd love to still work with you, Kate, but on a consulting basis. Kate's head was spinning.
Are you saying that I'm fired?
Amanda flinched at the word.
Well, not exactly.
Laid off is more accurate. You'll have a generous severance package, of course, and I'd like to be in touch for future assignments, if you're interested. You'd be able to work from home, won't that be nice?
She tried to put a positive spin on a horrible situation, and Kate felt suddenly nauseous.
When do you want me to leave?
Amanda thought for a moment.
Well, you just turned in your feature and a new column yesterday, so there's really nothing else pressing. You could finish up by lunch today and start your holidays early.
She smiled as if she was doing Kate a favor. Kate slowly stood up and found her voice, although it was a bit shaky.
I hope you understand this is a bit of a shock. I really didn't see this coming. I thought I'd be safe. I guess that was silly.
I'm sorry, Kate. If it was up to me, this wouldn't happen.
She stuck her hand out and Kate shook it. She was feeling a mixture of anger and despair and shock. She also felt her eyes welling up and wanted to get out of Amanda's office before they spilled over and added to her humiliation.
Goodbye, Amanda. Merry Christmas, she added softly.
She left Amanda's office and went straight to the restroom, took a deep breath, and dabbed at her eyes. When she felt somewhat composed, she went to her desk and pretended that nothing was wrong. She spent the morning going through her emails and tying up loose ends, returning messages and setting up an autoresponder that simply said she was no longer with Boston Style and to follow up with Amanda. When noon rolled around and the office began to clear out for lunch, Kate grabbed her few personal items in her office, pictures of her and Dylan, a desk calendar, her favorite pens, and put them all in her oversized tote bag. And then she left. She walked out of the office without saying goodbye to anyone. She especially avoided Tasha, as she knew she'd break down in tears if she had to tell her or anyone what had happened. Especially after Tasha had said just the night before that of anyone, Kate was likely to be safe. She'd believed it too, which in retrospect was naive of her. The higher paid people were often the ones who got whacked, as Tasha had said. The expression had made Kate laugh when she'd first heard it. But she wasn't laughing now. All she wanted to do was to go home and crawl into bed. She didn't